Yeah, it's time, 3:15. Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for, first of all, keeping the yeshiva alive and keeping the yeshiva going with the Kol Torah. And thank you for coming to learn it together with me today. Now, I was informed this afternoon that the topic that we advertised for my shir was Inyane Halacha. Which you would think would not be too narrow for me to fit into that topic, but I actually not realizing that I planned on speaking about something else that is not Inyanei Halacha. But if you want me to switch to Inyanei Halacha, I can do that. So we'll take a vote. Zoomers don't count. We'll take a vote from the people in the room. I actually wanted to talk a little bit about Inyanei Hashkafa. That relates to tzaddik yisod olam and what it means to have tzaddikim and to lose tzaddikim, particularly Rabbi Kelmer, zeichus tzaddik lebracha, but we could do halacha also. So all those in favor of inyanei halacha, all those in favor of inyanei hashkafa, okay, so hashkafa it is. Okay, so the backstory over here is that this past summer I was at a wedding. I was at Eitan Rolnick's wedding, and we should, I guess, dedicate the learning to Zecher Nishmas Eitan's mother, who passed away yesterday. It should be an Aliyas Neshama. At Eitan Rolnick's wedding over the summer, and we were waiting for the chuppah to begin, and I noticed in the corner of the, it wasn't a room, it was outdoors, but in the corner of the area, there were two men that were huddled together, wearing masks, of course, N95s and everything, but they were huddled together and they were talking, and I looked closely and it was Rabbi Yudin and Rabbi Kelmer. And I thought to myself right away that I wonder if the other 34 are going to come also, because these are definitely two of the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. There must be a convention that's happening of Lamed Vav Tzadikim. That was like my first thought. My second thought was I should really take a picture, because this is a pretty special summit that's going on. Sadly, I did not take a picture. I didn't have the chutzpah to do so. Hopefully someone else did. But it really got me thinking just about what was lost, you know, especially with the patira of Rav Kelmer Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha this past week, of how many of the Lamed Vav Tzadikim, or the greatest tzadikim we know, have we lost this year? I mean, if you were to have to make a list of the top 36 or something like that a year ago, half that list is probably no longer walking this earth, and that's very jarring. And I think it comes at a great cost, even a greater cost than we realize. You know, there's a stira between different Ma'amari Chazal as to when Shibud Mitzrayim actually began. When did things start getting bad for Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim? At the beginning of Parshas Vayechi, Rashi quotes from Chazal, Kivan Sheniftar Yaakov Avinu, Nistimu Einayim V'libam Shal Yisrael Mitzaras HaShibud, Sheshchilu L'Shabdam. That when Yaakov Avinu passed away, that's when things got bad for the Jewish people. Yet, at the beginning of this week's Parsha, or last week's Parsha, the Pasuk says, Vayamas Yosef V'chol Echav V'chol Hador Hahu. And only then, Vayakov Melech Chadash al Mitzrayim, which Rashi points out in this week's Parsha, Parshas Ve'era, indicates to us that the trouble only began when the last of the Shvatim passed away, or when the last of the Shivim Nefesh passed away. And other sources indicate that no, it was with the death of Yosef or the death of some of the other Shvatim. So which is it? Meaning, which Ma'amari Chazal are we to believe? When did the Shibud really happen? The death of Yaakov? The death of each Shevet? The death of the last Shevet? The death of the last of the Shivim Nefesh? So the Sforno has a very important comment. The Sforno writes that as each great light, each Shevet passed away, we lost a little bit of Kedusha. And we have to think of Shibud Mitzrayim the way all of the Mefarshei Haggadah explain what it is that we're celebrating on the Pesach night, is that there's a Shibud Aguf, to be certain, for sure, but there's also a Shibud HaNefesh. And when we think about Shibud Mitzrayim, we have to think primarily about the Shibud HaNefesh, about the suffering that we have. If you look in the Nesivus Haggadah, pretty much the entire Haggadah is built on that Yisod of Shibud Aguf versus Shibud HaNefesh. And we have to think about the Shibud HaNefesh. And when Chazal tell us about beginnings of Shibud, what they're really telling us is that with each Shevet, or with each Tzaddik that passed away, we lost a little bit of Kedusha. The children of the Shvatim were righteous, says the Sforno, but not kol kach hashuvim be'enei Elokim v'adam, not quite to the level of their fathers. They weren't the same stature as the Shvatim. The Misa of the Shiftei Ka brought about a Yerida Ruchnis. It brought about a Ruchnistik, a Yerida. And then, Vayamas Yosef, V'chalachav, V'chaladarahu, the entire generation dies. as long as the Shivim Nefesh were alive, says the Sforno, lo ba hador l'kilkul gomer kol yameyem. We couldn't be totally ruined with the Shibur HaNefesh. It was only after the Patira of the Shivim Nefesh that Bnei Yisrael paru vayishritzu, which the Sforno understands means not to ledarke shratzim. We started acting like a bunch of rodents running all over the place. We were not acting like a mamlachas kohanim v'goy kadosh. The loss of tzaddikim brought about a loss of kedusha, and we lose our bearings because of that loss of kedusha. There aren't different dates to the beginning of the shibud. There are different levels of shibud ruchani that we fell into. And as we lost our role models and those who inspired us to be bigger people, to be people of kedusha, we kept losing our kedusha. And the loss of kedusha is the worst kind of assimilation that one can imagine. Meaning, we often think of assimilation as that we start to dress like the umos ha'olam that are around us. We start to do things like the Umos HaOlam. The greatest assimilation is just a sense of loss of Kedusha, of loss of dignity that Klal Yisrael is supposed to have. You know, the Rambam writes in the beginning of the 11th parak of Hilchos Avodah Zarah that just like the Bnei Yisrael, just like the Jewish people are supposed to be muvdal from the Amim in B'malbusheihem, in the way that we dress and these externalities. I'm sorry. He says that just like we are already muvdal in our deos and our midos from the Umos HaOlam, so too we also have to be muvdal in the way we dress. And the Rambam, Rav Aaron Kahn once pointed out, is making a major assumption. And the assumption is that we are muvdal b'deos. In Rambam language, the word deos means midos. Fundamentally, the worst kind of assimilation is if our midos are no longer the midos of the Jewish people, if we're no longer acting like Jewish people, and with the loss of Kedusha, that's where the midos start to falter. I don't know about you, but I've never in my life been so troubled by the behavior of so many members of Klal Yisrael as I have in recent months. I can't help but think that the loss of so many of our tzaddikim has made it more difficult for us, more challenging for us, to be big, to be different. The Jewish people are supposed to be moved al min ha'amim, not only in deos, in our midos. And it got me thinking about this concept of tzaddik yesod olam, or this concept of lamed vav tzaddikim. Where does it come from? You know, let's say I never interacted with the tzaddik. Does it really impact me if a tzaddik is around, if a tzaddik is walking the face of this earth? The fact that I walked this earth, I was born in 1977, and Ramesha Feinstein was walking on the same earth that I was walking on for the first 8 years of my life. Does that mean that there's something different about my life, even though I never met him? Is there something that about a tzaddik's existence in the world that somehow changes the world, even if it's not direct? So the basic idea of lamed vav tzaddikim that we're familiar with from Yiddish folklore and from listening to Karlbach or whatever is that there are apparently these 36 very holy people who are not known to anybody else. They're not even known to each other, and they don't have conferences, and these are the lamed vav tzaddikim. And as long as they exist, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he gets angry at us, doesn't take out his wrath on humanity because he has these zechus of these tzaddikim to protect us. And even if the world is totally depraved, you know, these 36 tzaddikim are worth everything. Where does that come from? Is there a source for A, the idea, and B, the number 36? So the idea has many, many sources. The number 36 has a critical source, but not many, many sources. So first, the idea. The first place we find the idea that the existence of tzaddikim is worthwhile to protect all of humanity is from where? Sefer Bereishis. You know the story. Is from Sodom. Avram Avinu and Sodom. What happens? Avram Avinu intercedes on behalf of the people of Sodom. If there are 50 tzaddikim, then he negotiates down 45 and 40 and 30 and 20. Some number of tzaddikim, he doesn't go 36, but some number of tzaddikim is going to be enough to protect everybody. Why should it be enough to protect everybody? Why should it protect everybody else? But apparently the zechus of those tzaddikim is enough to protect all of those around them. Rav Shachter once remarked that if a person is an incredible tzaddik, then he's his zechuyos are so great that he'll be protected even shalom b'derech hateva. That meaning even if everyone else around him is dying of a plague or suffering or whatever, he's going to be fine. But if a person is like a mid-range tzaddik, then his tzidkus is enough to protect him, but only b'derech hateva. So it's going to save everybody. He told us that in one of the parsha shiurim recently. Rav Shachter said when the Gulf War was happening, the first Gulf War, when Saddam Hussein, Yimach Shmo, was shooting Scud missiles at Eretz Yisrael, so a whole group from YU went to the Gross Center and stayed in the Gross campus, and he said he had an old Talmud that was learning in the Mir at the time that came to spend Shabbos with them, and they asked the guy to say Dvar Torah, and he said this Dvar Torah. He said that when you have holy, holy tzaddikim, so bombs can come in and will kill everybody else, but the holy tzaddik is going to be zocha to an ace nigla. If you have regular tzaddikim, so then everybody around them is going to be saved as well. So apparently this guy had the chutzpah to say, in the Mir, the tzaddikim are so holy that I was afraid to stay there in the Mir, because the Finkel family will be okay, but what's going to be with me? So I figured I'll come here, and I can't imagine he said that, but that's what Rav Shachter told us over. So he thought he was safer in that location. But you do see this idea. We often think of tzaddikim as people who directly influence us, who guide us, who teach us, and that's often the case. Through the Torah that they teach, the example that they set, the Piskei Halacha that they give. Rav Twersky in his latest essay, and you should read all of them. It's not only about Corona. The stuff Rav Twersky is teaching and he's writing about is so deep and so important in terms of a proper Hashkafas Hachayim and a depth of understanding of some important inyanim. But one of the things he spoke about is the role of Gedolei Torah. And Rav Twersky Shlita pointed out that Lefa'amim Tzuras Hagadlus Shona Lechalutin. After describing the typical example of a Gadol, he says sometimes you have a different surah of a Gadol. Hagadol Kimat Minutak Mina Metzius. You'll have a Gadol who is completely removed from the Metzius of this world. He's like living as a malach. He's not really connected to this world. And it's not a criticism. That's his godless. His godless is that he's only in the Dalanama Shalalacha. He's only in the Beis Medrash. He's only in Torah. He's only in Avodas Hashem. He's walking on this earth, but he's living in this bubble of Kedusha. He says, I don't even need to tell you that both forms of godless are critical forms of godless and bring great bracha. Well, wait a second, the first one I understand, the first form of godless where I have my Rosh Hashiva who teaches me Torah and who guides me and who understands the world and he understands my challenges, I see why that brings bracha meruba. But why does the godless that Rav Twersky is describing that's totally removed, why does that bring bracha meruba? His existence brings bracha meruba and is worthwhile and is something that keeps the world going. Al shneim ne'emar tzadik yisod olam v'torasa mekayemes ha'olam. It's their Torah that keeps the world going around. Rav Twersky goes on to say that if you then ask them shilos that relate to a familiarity with metzius, that category of tzadik should not be the address to ask such shilos. At the very least, it would cause an embarrassment to the tzadik, and at worst, he'll try to answer and he'll do it incorrectly, and that's exacerbated by the recent invention of a concept called Das Torah, which used to not exist, but now exists, and people think that not only do you have to ask the most removed tzaddik from the entire world everything about like Lemaisa Lemaisa, but everyone thinks that if you ask anybody else, it's a bizayin to that tzaddik. So if you talk to any other Talmud Chacham, then in some way it's considered a bizayin to that tzaddik. And they think that that's called Kavanah Torah. It's the opposite of Kavanah Torah. It's a bizayin Torah to do that, to not appreciate that kind of tzidkos of being menutak min ha'olam, that's what keeps the world going around. Eitzah? I need Eitzah from the other kind of tzaddik, from the kind of tzaddik that's a part of the world and not a part from the world. But you do see that there is this concept of such tzaddikim that keep the world going around. Another source that doesn't give the number 36, but certainly relates to this idea, Gemara in Chulin, Daf Tzadi Beis Amar Aleph. Chomer Sa'orim V'lesach Sa'orim Elu Mem Hei Tzadikim Sha'olam Miskayim Behem. Ooh, it gives a number, just not the same number. 45. The only thing we can't figure out is it 30 in Israel and 15 in Chutz Laaretz or the other way around. So there are 30 in Eretz Yisrael and 15 in Chutz Laaretz. Okay, so these are, and then Rabbi Yehuda adds tzaddiki umas ha'olam, that there are even such a thing as tzaddiki umas ha'olam, that the umas ha'olam are miskayim through their own tzaddikim, that there could be such a thing. Not just could be, there are such a thing as very righteous Gentiles through which the umas ha'olam are miskayim. So that's a second source for the idea, but again, not the number 36. A third potential source is the Gemara in Yuma, Taflam and Chesam and Beis. Vam Rab Chia Barabam Rabbi Yochanan, afilu b'shvil tzaddik echad ha'olam miskayim, shenemar v'tzaddik yisod olam, that the entire world can exist based on the zchus of one tzaddik. And this comes out most famously in Sukkah Daf Mem Hei. Why most famously? Because the guys in yeshiva all learned Sukkah Mem Hei. Who learned Chul and Tzadi Beis? Who learned Yom Alamechah? But Sukkah Mem Hei, everyone always learned. So in Sukkah Mem Hei, the Gemara tells us that Amr Chizkia, Amr Rabbi Yirmiyam, Shum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai, Yochla Ani Liftar Eskol Olam Kulam Min Adin Miyom Shin Vresi Adata, that through my own Zuchuyos, I could protect the world from facing Din from the day I was born until now. Vilmoli Eliezer Bini Imi, and if my son Eliezer is with me, the two of us together as a tag team, we could pop through the world from Din, from the day the world was created up until now. And if you give us a mezuman and you send us Yosem ben Uziyahu, miyom shenivra olam ad sofo, from all of creation. He said, I've seen a few b'nei aliyah. Im elef hein, ani u'b'nei mehen. If there are 1,000, my son and I are among those 1,000. Im meyahem, ani u'b'nei mehen. If there are 100, my son and I are among the 100. Im shnayim hein, ani u'b'nei hein. And if there are 2, then my son and I are those 2. So says Gemara, are there so few? They're really so few? Can you even entertain the possibility that there are only 2 B'nai Aliyah? There are only 2 people worthy of keeping the world going? There are 18,000 rows by around HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shem Sav Shmona Esra'elef. So lo kasha. Had misakli bas baklaria miira. Had misakli bas baklaria. Dolam misakli bas baklaria miira. There are different madrigas. There are those that are misakli bas baklaria miira that see Akrosh Baruch with great clarity, or see something. They see nevuah with great clarity, or something. Something. Normally we use it as a term nevuah. Over here it's chachma. That their chachma has such an enormous clarity, and others that don't have chachma with such enormous clarity. So it says more. But still, udim misakli bas baklaria miira mizutikul lehai. Are there so few that are misakli bas baklaria hamiira? Vam Rabaye, here it is. Lo pachos alma mitlosin vishita tzadiki de mekabli api shchina b'chol yom. There you have it. The world never has less than 36 tzadikim that are mekabel p'nei shchina every day. Shnemar ashrei kolchoche lo with a vav. Lamid vav begematria tlosin vishisa havu. That's a gematria of 36. From the gematria we learn that there are 36 tzadikim that are mekabel p'nei shchina every day. So it says, mar lo kasha hadayav dabar, hadayav dalobar. Okay, so it's still, there are different madregos, but 36 is the number, and we don't move from that number that there has to be. So that's what the Gemara says. Now, granted, there are other, you know, it's like, how many mitzvahs are there in the Torah? So the Gemara at the end of Malchus tells us that there are Taryag mitzvahs in the Torah. The Ramban in his first Hasaga and the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs is, I disagree with the premise of this book. The premise of this book is that there are 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. Me'echi teisi, because there's one Gemara Malchus. Whenever the Ramban had a Hasaga on the Rambam, it's not that the Rambam was against something, it's that the Rambam was against everything, right? That's how the Ramban works. What about this Maamar Chazal and that one and that one and that one? This one says there are 10,000. This one says there are 2,000. This one says there are 500. This one says, and you just go, meaning there are any, it depends how you count them. You know, there are no, you don't have to make a book of 613 and make it fit. And in fact, when the Ramban subtracts a few and adds a few, he ends up not with 613. It comes out that it's not necessarily 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. Similar idea over here, that you have one Maamar Chazal that became really lucky, that became really famous, of 36 tzaddikim. It might be 45, it might be 2, it might be whatever it is, but the idea certainly exists. Marsha asks that this seems to be against the Gemara Nivamas Memtes, that only Moshe Rabbeinu was Ro'a Bas Baklaria Mi'ira, and against the Gemara Kulin Sadi Beis that there are 45 tzaddikim, and he explains, no, there's only one Navi that was Rav Basbakaria Meira, but Chacham Adav Minavi, and therefore there are 36 Chachamim, and the Gemara Kulin Sadi Beis is not a stira. When the Gemara Kulin says there are 45, that's tzaddikim b'masim tovim. But over here we're talking about tzaddikim that are Chachamim b'iun muskalos, that they're Chachamim in an intellectual level also, not just Maisim Tovim. So maybe it's not a stira between the different Gemaras, says the Marsha, and maybe there are 36 tzaddikim, but those 36 tzaddikim need to be great, great Talmidei Chachamim as well, not just tzaddikim. If it was purely tzidkus, that would be the 45. You know, it's like in the Frum newspapers, you could tell what a person's profession is by the title under the, you know, the caption under the picture. If it's a Rav HaGoyin, then he's a Rav or Rosh Yeshiva. If it's a Rav HaTzadik, then he's a Mashkiach. Right, because pashut, every mashkiach is a tzaddik, and every rav or a shiv is a gain. But that's how it breaks down. But meaning it comes with the recognition. Obviously, you're not going to, you know, it gets political. But it comes with the recognition that there are different kochos. That there's something about being a tzaddik and a tefillah of a tzaddik, even if the person is not a gain. Right, that's what much of chassidus is based on. Why does the rebbe's son become the rebbe? Because he grew up, meaning is he necessarily a genius? Is he necessarily the biggest Talmud Chacham? But we assume, growing up with the Kedusha and the Tzidkos around him, that he becomes, or they assume, that he becomes the greatest Tzaddik, and the power of a Tzaddik, whether he is a great Talmud Chacham or is not, is a powerful force as well, the idea of a Tzaddik. The Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Ayin Beis and Beis, tells us, Kishemes Rebbe Nolad Rebbe Yehuda, and so Lamedcha She'in Tzaddik Nifter Menolam Atche Nivrat Tzaddik Kamoso, right? Meaning the assumption that we always have about the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim is that when one is gone, another one takes his place. So that's also based on the Gemara. The Gemara in Kiddushin tells us that when someone major is gone, someone else is born. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, well, wait a second, what do you do for the next 30 years while that someone else that's born is growing up? You know, so is Klal Yisrael left bereft? So the Rabbi Yaakov Emden and writes, Shazel Vade Hevel, the Dover Bottle, La Halo Saladas, La Hantin Ala Katana, Madashe Yigdulu, Ubosna Yam Tia Adas Hashem, Kitsona Shreinam Roa Chasvashalom. No, Chasvashalom, that you're going to say that Klal Yisrael is aimless and we have nobody in the interim while the kid is growing up. No, Lakach Birusho, Mitok Shabachal Pam, Shemes, Tzadik, Nola, the Acher Tachtov. Lachain b'misoshel shalechet kvar nimtza biolam tzadik acher miyamim rabim sheikanis miyabim mekoma shalameis kemo shahaya ha'inyan shmuel acher eli. So no, it means that there's another one that's ready to take his place when one tzadik is gone. The Aruch Lehrer points out that it only says lo pachos alma. It could be that there's a, you know, that right before COVID HaKadosh Baruch Hu loaded up on tzadikim, and we had not 36, it could be that we had 100 of them and now we have 36, meaning there's no guarantee that it has to only be 36. That's what the Aruch Lehrer suggests. A final source for this idea of tzaddikim being able to protect us, the Gemara Masech Sanhedrin of Sadi Zainam Beis, Amar Abaye, and here it is again, Lo pachus alma mitlasin v'shita tzaddiki de mekabli api shchina b'chol dora. Every generation has 36 tzaddikim. Shenemar ashrei kol chochelo. Lo b'gematria tlasin v'shisin havu. So it says, it's v'shisa havu. It says, well, is that really so? What about the 18,000 in front of Kosh Baruch Hu, Aspachar Yemira? The same Gemara. So the Gemara then asks, well, wait a second, Mina Fishi Kulehai? Are there even that many? What about Aniyu B'ni Mehem, Aniyu B'ni Heim? So again, the Gemara makes that distinction, Aili B'bar, Aili B'lo Bar. So the Gemara, the same Gemara, appears in Masech Sanhedrin. Question is, where does number 36 come from? Like, why 36? What? Okay, I understand, it's Gematria, Lamed Vav, so that tells you that it's 36. But Mehechitesi, like, why would that be? Is the number 36 significant in Judaism? So when we think of 36, what do we think of? What? Ooh, Mesechtas and Shas. I thought someone was going to say Pamayim Chai, right? We always think of Pamayim Chai. They say that's the old joke they say that the Satmar Rebbe made, that someone used to donate every time they got an aliyah, the gematria of Yoel, because the Satmar Rebbe's name is Yoel. So the Satmar Rebbe told the guy, you know, in Europe they called me Yoelish. So where's number 36 come from? So in Gilyonei Ashas and the Yerushalmi in Zra'im Chaf Gimel Ozkufayin Dalid, the Yerushalmi in Ma'aser Sheni, in the fourth paragraph of Ma'aser Sheni, says that Ein Mechalel the Ma'aser Sheni Ela Ad Shloshim V'Sheish B'Shavyam. And the Pnei Moshe explains that if you add 1/36 of the value, the Kedusha is chal on the Tosefes as well. But if you add more than that in being Mechal the Maaser Sheni, then the Kedusha won't be chal. So apparently the number 36 represents the ability for Kedusha to expand, for Kedusha to go where it should not have gone. So the idea of 36 tzaddikim is representative of the idea that we've been talking about, that you have these tzaddikim whose kedusha is such that it impacts the rest of us, that they are tzaddikei yisod olam, that even those who maybe aren't on that level of kedusha will benefit from that level of kedusha. It doesn't exactly, you know, compute, because that's talking about a ratio, and you know, ratio-wise, lamed vav to the rest of the world, it doesn't. But that's at least, you know, based on the number 36. In the Tshuvas Yehuda Yala, Chelek Aleph Sim Reish Tes, he explains it's based on the Gemara Makos Chaf Gimel Beis, that Torah is begematria Sheish Meos Ve'Achad Asar, 611. When you add the Bris HaTorah to get 612, because the Torah is Nitna Im Lo Bris Yom of Lai L'Chukah Shemayim Varet Sol Samti, so there is Nitna Yisrael B'Bris. So 36 times Tov is 612. So the world was created for the world to be able to be Osek B'Torah, that if you have Tov times 36, so 36 that live up to that level of Tov, so that's representative of Torah. The Balaturim in Bereishis, Paraktas Vav, says that originally it was 30, because Ko Yehiyeh Zaracha, and Yehiyeh is Gematria 30, but then Vehemin Ba'Hashem, and in the Zchus of Avram answering Amen, Al Berchas Shal Karosh Baruch Hu, so it added the Bracha and became 36, V'yachashiv Lo Tzedakah. So somehow it was expanded to 36. I don't know, whatever resonates with you, I guess. It's in the Haggadah Shel Pesach of the Rokeach, in his commentary to Shir HaShirim, which is printed in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, he says that it's a remez to Dodi Li Va'ani Lo, because Ani B'Gematria Shishim, representing Shishim Rivo Shel B'nai Yisrael, Lo, Lamed Vav, is 36, corresponding to the Tzadikim. But as you suggested, Lamed Vav is the number of Masechtos that have Gemara. It's not true, says the Tshuvas Yehuda Yala. There are 37 Masechtos that have Gemara. So he says, either you count Makkos and Sanhedrin as one, or Tamid doesn't count, because it was arranged after Rav Ashi died. So you don't count Tamid on the list. But somehow that relates to Torah, relates to, and this fits nicely with the idea that the Marsha said, that really there are 45. What do you mean only 36? No, the 45 are B'maisim Tovim. The 36 are particularly when it comes to Torah, when it comes to excellence in Torah. So the number 36 in some way should represent Torah. So I just wanted to take the rest of the time that we have and talk about some of the lessons to be learned. How many, just by a show of hands, how many of you ever met Rav Yehuda Kalmer, Zecher Tzadik Livracha? How many of you ever heard of him before I came in? Okay. Rav Kalmer was he was a nistar. You know, when you think of Lamed Vavniks, you know, you hide him in West Hempstead, you know, in not even the five towns, right? Meaning it's like, and he was an absolute, absolute nistar. And, you know, he was not like this major public persona, but his gaonus and sitkus is almost unparalleled by anything I've ever seen. Meaning, that was the thought when I saw Rabbi Kelmer Zatzal and Yibad Chaim Tov Meruchim Rabbi Yudin sitting together, like, okay, these are definitely two of the 36. Before I even did all the research in terms of where 36 comes from and what it's all about, but these are definitely two of the 36. So I want to talk just a little bit about him. I did not know him well. I met him on a few occasions. I went to yeshiva when I was a kid with one of his sons, who was the smartest kid in the class by like a million miles. And just really saw him at a lot of chasanas and things like that over the years. You know, he spoke in my shul once, I spoke in his shul, you know, a few times. But I did not, like, I never really spent meaningful time with him, so I'm not like a bar hachi to talk about him. I just feel like a lot of people don't know about him, and it's like there's such inspiration to be gained. He was a Torah genius. He was recognized by Gedolei Torah as such. When he left the Mir Yeshiva, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz cried that he was going into Rabbanus in America. What a waste of Gaonus to be in Rabbanus in America. This is a person who's in Eretz Yisrael, Dika Talmud Chacham. You know, like when an American rabbi knows what daf a few Gemaras are on, ooh, he's a goyim, you know? But Eretz Yisrael, Dika Talmud Chacham will tell you a Sivkat Ninshach, right? He'll tell you a Prima Gadim Balpe, that kind of thing. So he was in Eretz Yisrael, Dika Talmud Chacham. Rav Gifter took him as a chavrusa when he was a bacher in Telz. Rav Avram Janachovsky could not believe that such a yid existed in America. They said it is Levaya. Someone met Rav Avram Jankowski, and he said, he was a relative of Rabbi Kelmer that he met, and he said, I couldn't believe that there's such a yid that exists in America. In Rav Eliashiv's Kovitz Tshuvas, I just gave his Tamin Halacha, Rav Eliashiv wrote a tshuva to Rav Kelmer, printed in the Sefer is Rav Kelmer's tshuva to Rav Eliashiv first, you know, where he wrote up the Shaila, and like it, just beautiful give and take in Torah. The family apparently has many letters from Rav Moshe Feinstein, where Rav Moshe corresponded with Rav Kelmer. I remember as a child, not a child, but as a college student, I was in YU with a good friend of mine, we're still very good friends to this day, Moshe David, and his father was driving us back, Rabbi Mel David was driving us back to the Five Towns, I guess, even though they lived in West Hempstead, but they were kind enough to drop me off in the Five Towns. It's really kind, now that I think about it, because it's a little bit out of the way. But he was driving us back, and we got in the car. He said, you're not going to believe what just happened. Rabbi David said, I've been researching a particular topic for months, and I uncovered every source I could, and there was one kasha I couldn't find anyone that spoke about it. And finally, in some library, whatever, I found, you know, that there was a 17th century Iraqi posek that spoke about this topic, and I just wanted to know if there's anything I was missing. So I went to Rabbi Kelmer, and I told him, you know, about the topic, and I said, I have this one kasha. Rabbi Kelmer said, there is a 17th century Iraqi posek like that. Mamish on his fingertips. You would talk to him in learning, and he would quote you, Rishonim Baal Peh, passages of Rishonim Baal Peh, unbelievable Gaon. Jeremy Teichman, who's a Talmud in our yeshiva, wrote about how he would tell a Dvar Torah as if it were a story of his life, meaning he would say, I was bothered by Akasha 35 years ago, but then 24 years ago, I was in a shul in Brooklyn, and I opened up a sefer, and he answered my kasha. But then 11 years ago, I was in Bnei Brak, and you know, I saw a sefer somewhere, and it had the kasha on the territory. Just, it was like, that was his life story. His life story was Torah. But when you hear most people talk about him, they talk about chesed. He was a Baal Chesed of epic proportions. It's rare for a Gon Amiti to be appreciated by Amei Haaretz. And you know, he would object to me referring to anybody that way, but there are people that don't know Aleph Beis that view him as a Gadol. Now, that's rare for a Gon Amiti, for a true Gon Batorah. Usually, they cannot be appreciated. It's like a fine wine. They cannot be appreciated for those who don't know what that means. But when you're a Gon in Chesed as well, then you can. And he was probably even more loved by simple people than he was by great Talmid Chachamim, and that was due to his extraordinary acts of chesed. He was seen walking along the highway. This was Rabbi Rothwack sent me this story, that he was Masada Kedushin at a wedding in Baltimore. So a couple that was driving back from the wedding was driving down the highway, and they see a yid walking along the highway, and they're like, oh no, why is there a Jew walking along the highway? So they pulled over the car, and they look, and it's Rabbi Kelmer, and they're like, Rabbi Kelmer, is everything okay? He said, yeah, my car ran out of gas. This is before Waze. So I'm going to a gas station. I'm just going to get some gas. So they said, do you know where a gas station is? No, but if I walk long enough, I'll find a gas station. You know, like he was totally unfazed by it. And they said, oh, come into the car. We'll take you to one. No, it's okay. You're in a rush. You need to go home. They said, it's fine. He's walking alone on a highway like someone comes to save you. So then they start talking to him. They said, why aren't you like rattled by this? He said, it happens all the time. Like, what do you mean it happens all the time? He said, because when I'm driving, that's the only time I could really stop to think about who needs a visit, who needs a phone call. What, you know, I have to go through the membership list in my head and think about who can use some chizik, who can use. So I'm just not focused, and so I'm always running out of gas and walking along highways. Rabbi Rothbach sent me that story. I think I'm in the wrong business. You know, like it's more than a little humbling. And the walks were something he was known for. Rain or shine, extreme heat, he would walk to the hospital hours each way. Very often he didn't make it home to say Kiddush until midnight, because he'd first walk 2 hours to the hospital to be Mevaker Chola, and then come back, and then, you know, he'll have like the teenagers in shul doing a Mishmar program, and he told them all come at 11:30 to say Dvar Torah. He would come, they didn't even realize he hadn't been home yet by the time he would come back at 11:30 at night to say Dvar Torah, and then he would go home and say Kiddush for his wife, who obviously is a tzaddikus to put up with this. Now I heard two stories within a few minutes of each other the other day. One story was that immediately, as soon as he was nifter, I sent a text to my Talmidim, anyone who's going into Rabbanus, keep your ear close to the ground, pay careful attention to every story that you're going to hear in the next couple of weeks about Rabbi Kelmer, because there was no doubt that it was going to be an avalanche of stories. So one of them was that somebody's grandfather was suffering from Alzheimer's and was sick in Maimonides Hospital, and Rabbi Kelmer went to visit when the family wasn't there. He didn't tell the family he was coming, and they came in and they caught him davening, holding the Zaidi's hand. And the nurse, and he said, "Oh, I just wanted to, you know, give a kavod to a Holocaust survivor," and he wished them well, and he went. And the nursing staff said he had been there for over an hour, sitting there with his, and he didn't even tell the family that that's what he was doing, because he sincerely just went to be mevaker chole, sincerely just went to be mespalel with the chole. And 2 minutes before that, I got a story about a premature baby in the NICU, and the parents had to go home to get some rest. They couldn't stay there all night, so they finally went home to get to rest, and the father couldn't sleep. He was having trouble sleeping, so he came back to the hospital because his baby was in the NICU, couldn't sleep. He came back to the hospital at 2 a.m. and he finds Rabbi Kelmer sitting there davening with the baby. He didn't tell them, he didn't say what he was doing, but that's who Rabbi Kelmer was. It's a level of tzidkus that was beyond. He affected thousands of people, but you know, I was looking at the Levaya. There were 3,600 people streaming the Levaya, which means 3,600 screens, which is obviously probably many more people. But like, he didn't like have like you know, a social media presence. He didn't like put out content all the time for like people to devour. He wasn't like this public personality that people, you know, it was one by one. He affected all of those thousands of people. It was act of chesed after act of chesed. And it's not just concern, but like a deep, deep respect that he had for everybody. His son-in-law said at the Levaya that when he first came to the shul, as everyone was coming to say Good Shabbos, he was introducing his son-in-law to each member of the Kihila, and he had a different beautiful thing to say about each and every person in the Kihila. Like something unique, not just, oh, he's a nice guy, he's a nice guy, he's a nice guy, he causes me trouble. Like a different, like unique thing to say about every single person. Yehoshua is described in Parshas Pinchas as Ish Asher Ruach Bo. And Rashi and Chumash explains that he understood Ruach Shel Kol Echad Ve'echad. He understood what made each one tick. He knew exactly what to say to each person to make them feel good. You didn't walk away from any of your encounters feeling small. You always walked away feeling big. You always walked away feeling chashuv. You know, a Talmud of mine, I remember when I was teaching in DRS, one of my Talmidim asked me a shaila. I said, "Wait a second, you live in West Hempstead. You have like God Odor as your rabbi. Go ask Rabbi Kelmer." He said, "Really? I should ask Rabbi Kelmer?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "This is big enough to ask Rabbi Kelmer?" I said, "Yeah, you can ask Rabbi Kelmer. Nothing's too small for Rabbi Kelmer. You can ask Rabbi Kelmer." So he asked Rabbi Kelmer, and he came back to me a few days later, maybe it was a week later, like glowing. He had handwritten a tshuva in English, because, you know, so you can understand it, from Rabbi Kelmer, first apologizing that it took him so long to get back to him, and I saved it. I have it in my drawer at home. I actually posted it on Twitter, and you know, just a whole tshuva, 5 points of a tshuva to the kid felt like he was the most important person in the world. That Rabbi Kelmer sat down and wrote a tshuva to him. He made everybody feel that way. One of his children discovered a story in some version of Sefer Chassidim, the Sefer Chassidim, of a shepherd who davened in his own words, "Hashem, you trusted me with these sheep, so allow me to protect them properly." And when a chacham saw the shepherd davening that way, he told the shepherd, "Nah, that's not how you daven." And he taught him to say Shemoneh Esrei and say Shema. And the shepherd, it was only one lesson, so he forgot how to say all these tefillos. But now all that he knew was that he doesn't know how to daven. Meaning, because that's what the Chacham essentially taught him. You don't know how to daven, you're supposed to say Shema, Nasvei, and Shema. So all the shepherd knew was that he doesn't know how to daven at all. So Hashem sent a malach to this Chacham that he's missing the most precious tefillos in the world that he always relied on, the tefillos of that simple shepherd. That's what it says in Sefer Chassidim. So Rav Kelmer's son said that he told his father this story, and Rav Kelmer said, it's not in all versions of Sefer Chassidim, it's in this version, that version, like he knew exactly which, he said, of course he knew the story, he was familiar with the story, and exactly which versions of Sefer Chassidim was in. And he said his father never got excited. He was like the most calm, serene person. And he became very excited, and he said, "That story should be emblazoned on the entranceway of every shul in the world." Meaning he believed deeply, he was a descendant of the Baal Shem Tov, he believed deeply in the tzidkus of every Jew. He believed deeply. He only saw Kedusha. That's why I said before, when I say Amei Aretz appreciated, he would take such offense to me using that that term. He believed deeply in the greatness of every Jew. He didn't have a bad side. His kids said they never heard him raise his voice. It's astonishing for, you know, like growing up in a house, never heard him raise his voice. One of his children said, this was the most astonishing thing at the Levaya. One of his children said, we're supposed to ask Mechila, but we can't ask Mechila because you never gave us the impression that we ever did anything to upset you. You know, what? He's your father. He never gave the impression that you ever did anything. Like, didn't you once not clean up your room? I mean, didn't you once leave the light on? I don't know, whatever dad things that dads get upset about. Like, nothing. Didn't you once leave the gas tank empty in the car? You know, I guess that was Rabbi Kelmer's thing to do. But, you know, but you never gave us the impression. The message that his children took is to always be mevater. Shalom at all costs. They said to the Zvaya that the only kavod they could ever give him is a kavod achra, because during life he always deflected all kavod he tried to give him. I experienced this myself when I spoke to him. I would try to tell him nice things, and the next thing I know, we're talking about me. I'm like, how did we get here? You know, this was he was so skilled. He was so at deftly, you know, shifting the conversation to make it about the other person. Jeremy said that when he went to visit him in the rehab center after he had a terrible accident a few years ago, he was in the same room as a non-Jew named Tom. And he said, next thing they knew, they were all just talking to Tom. And he said, Rabbi Kalman realized Tom wasn't getting any visitors. Tom is going to feel bad if he sees the rabbi getting all these visitors. So he figured out a way to incorporate Tom into all the conversations. And he had nothing in common. Tom was a Christian. He had nothing in common with Tom. But they, other than the fact that they both suffered some sort of accident. You know, in Yiddish folklore, there is a maisa, and this was said at the Levaya, that really also struck me. A maisa, I forget the exact details of what was said, but a maisa of some rav who was doing some extraordinary act of chesed, and he wasn't in shul because of the extraordinary act of chesed that he was doing, but it was being done privately. The gabbai had seen him, you know, doing this, whatever it was, chopping wood for an almana, whatever it was. And the gabbai comes to the shul, and somebody asked the gabbai sarcastically, you know, where's the, in Yiddish, but I don't know how to speak Yiddish, so I'll say, where's the rav? In Himmel? The Rav in heaven? Where did he go? And the Gabbai's response was a little bit above him. He's just a little bit above that. I mean, whatever you can imagine as being like the highest Madrega, he's a little bit above that. And that's what they were saying at the Levaya, that was Rabbi Kelmer. Like, you think he's in the heavens? He was a little bit above the heavens. Whatever you can imagine is like the greatest chesed you could do. He figured out how to do it a little bit better than that. Yeah, in my shul, he spoke a few years ago, L'zecher Nishmas Rabbi Maurice Lamb. Rabbi Maurice Lamb's first yard site was a few months after Rabbi Kelmer's terrible accident. So it was his first public appearance outside of his own shul that he made, his first public speaking engagement. And why did he do it? Because Rebbetzin Lamb, Shetichya, called him up and asked him to do it, and he couldn't say no to Rebbetzin Lamb. So what he spoke about was, it was before Shavuot's time, and he spoke about how the Shechinas me'olam lo yarda l'mata me'asara, and Moshe Rabbeinu was lo'ala l'mala me'asara. So he said, what does it mean? I'm l'mala me'asara, I'm more than 10 tefachim tall, so what does it mean exactly? So he said, asara tefachim represents a mechitza, right? A mechitza is asara tefachim. That's you learn Erevin, you learn Sukkah. That's the gedra of asara tefachim. Shechina is lo yarda l'mata me'asara tefachim. He suggested means, when he spoke, is that the Torah is lo b'shamayim. That when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, it came l'mata me'asara without the Shechina coming with it, meaning without HaKadosh Baruch Hu maintaining control of it. It's called Matan Torah, not because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us Torah, it should be Kabbalah Satorah. It's called Matan Torah because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave over the Torah. It's the notion of lo b'shamayim, that we now have control of the Torah to interpret it properly. Now, what does it mean that Moshe Rabbeinu was not l'mata me'asara? So that's the idea, that other than the transmission of Torah itself, if Moshe Rabbeinu was talking and learning with somebody, you know, about how to darshan or you know, a pasuk or something, the other person is entitled to opinion. And if there are rabbim in the Sanhedrin that go against Moshe Rabbeinu, vote against Moshe Rabbeinu, they win. But he's Moshe Rabbeinu. No, but he doesn't call them Malamei Asara. There's no one that goes lamala me'asar. When the Torah is in human, that's so. There are people that are great, but there's no one that goes lamala me'asar. So as I was listening to that, I kept on thinking that abyssal higher than the Himmel. That if there was ever a Jew that went lamala me'asara, that went to a point that was just a little bit higher than anyone could imagine, that was Rabbi Kelmer. He didn't rise above 10 tefachim, obviously l'shita so, but he sure seemed like he did. And just a final point, you know, it's telling that at his levaya, two of the maspidim chose to talk about the mission at the end of Sota. What's the mission at the end? Mishameis this one, batla that mida. Mishameis this one, batla that mida. Right. So one of them spoke about Mishameis Revi batla anava, I think. The other one Mishameis Yosef ben Yosef batla. Who was it? Isha Eshkolos. Whichever one was Isha Eshkolos. So what I found so telling about that was, even though they chose different examples, when that's your go-to, what you're saying is that this is a person that's irreplaceable. Mishameis so-and-so butla, that means that your first reaction, the gut reaction, if that's what you're going to talk about at the Levaya, is that this is a person who's irreplaceable. So just bringing it full circle to what we started with, we lost a lot of tzaddikim this year, and I have to believe that, you know, our defense to the Ribbono Shel Olam about some of our behaviors over the course of the year, collectively as Klal Yisrael, that maybe haven't inspired the greatest confidence in the tzidkus of Klal Yisrael and the righteousness of Klal Yisrael's Ribbono Shel Olam. You keep taking away kedusha from us, and if you take away kedusha, it has an impact. There's such a thing as a tzaddik yisod olam. Our avoda is to overcome that. Our avoda is to find the replacements of the lamed vav. The next round, as the Gemara says, when one leaves the world, another one is coming into the world, and to be able to be inspired by them. And if you know, just l'mashal, you know, if this started with the Maisa where at Eitan Rolnick's wedding I see Rabbi Yudin and Rabbi Kelman, we still have Rabbi Yudin, right? We still have great tzaddikim. And we have to take advantage of those great tzaddikim and be able to appreciate what they have to offer and be able to become great tzaddikim so that we can not only protect ourselves, but Bezer Hashem protect the entire world. Okay.